no matter what hour your clock strikes here, it's always Halloween. And I'm always your haunted host, Luce Tomlin Brenner. Welcome to Small Frights Friday. On these very special episodes, I like to share a curated selection of calls from the All Hallows Hotline and letters from the Eek mailbag. If you have a Halloween memory, recommendation, or query that you'd like to share, you can call us at 802-532-DEAD or write us at itsalwayshalloweenpodcast@gmail.com. With calendar Halloween quickly approaching, we are gathering loads of new lanterns on our porch. So welcome to all of you. I'm happy that you're here. We're thrilled to have you lighting up our cozy evening. If you are new to the podcast, I encourage you to start listening from the beginning. The episodes build on each other. That doesn't mean that you have to leave right now. Please stick around. But after you listen to this episode, go back to episode one and see where we've already traveled. This episode and every lovely episode is produced by the Patreon Ghoul Gang. Thank you, you ghastly ghouls, for keeping us ad-free, independent, and sustainable. I'm de-frightfully happy to welcome our newest Ghoul Gang members who signed up in the last week. Welcome, Elaine, Emily, Claudia, and Skog Troll. Really fun name, don't know what it means, but I really like saying Skog Troll, which is like the only way to say it, right? Welcome, Skog Troll. It's great to have you here. It's great to have all of you here, and we have got quite a fun slate of activities lined up for the Ghoul Gang this month, and oh my god, next month. My head's spinning. There's so many things I want to do. So obviously, it's a great time to sign up to get bonus Halloween excitement. And listen, I know some of you are already anticipating the end of Halloween because we love this holiday and we can't help be a little worried that we're already missing out on stuff. I know that's what some of your heads are doing. Take a deep breath. You're never going to miss anything when you're with It's Always Halloween because there's no end. That's the beauty of our community. We get to just keep having fun Halloween-y stuff to do. So this month we're doing Stephen King September. Next month for calendar Halloween, we are doing Scary Stories to Tell in the Dark theme. November, we are doing the Legend of Sleepy Hollow theme. And in December, we have Gothic horror theme. So if you have a little voice in the back of your head where you're like, I don't know how I'm going to fit all this Halloween stuff in next month, hey, we don't have to worry about fitting anything in over here. And on the Patreon, we have got incredible activities planned for the next 3 months. So come on down to patreon.com/itsalwayshalloween or click the Patreon link in our show notes to join the Ghoul Gang and celebrate Halloween always. So like I said, this month we're celebrating Stephen King September, and we're examining the impact our modern master of horror has made on our favorite holiday. So on Patreon, we've got two big movie parties coming up. On Stephen King's birthday, Wednesday, September 21st, I'm screening Creepshow 1 and Creepshow 2. These are horror anthologies from the 80s. The first one was directed by George Romero. I can't remember the second director off the top of my head, but they both have really similar vibes. They're extremely macabre, and the twisted sense of humor that was displayed in them absolutely blew my mind when I saw them as a kid. Around Halloween, very heavily edited versions of the creep shows would play on network TV, probably cable too. We did not have cable when I was growing up, but you know, Sunday afternoons, a horror anthology would just pop on, and I would just get sucked in to the zany, the very zany qualities that it would have, and then be shocked by like a surprising jolt of horror. And I was mesmerized by it. I'd be laughing 1 minute, and then I'd get that chill all the way to the tips of my toes the next minute. And that's a feeling that I have loved ever since I saw these movies. So as I was saying, these horror anthologies, the screenplays were written by King himself, and it had such a big impact on me around this time of year that Creepshow and Cat's Eye, which I screened last weekend, feel synonymous with Halloween for me. So if you haven't seen them, join us on Wednesday, September 21st. We don't usually do screenings on Wednesdays, but like I said, that's the king's birthday, so we'll be celebrating him. I might even add another movie or two and make it like a whole day, so keep your eye on Patreon and Instagram for updates. And if you live in another country and you can't make it to screenings typically because they start too late, this might be the perfect time for you to join us. All right, so that's Wednesday, September 21st. And then on Saturday, September 24th, we're doing a double heaping of Carrie, Carrie by Brian De Palma, 1976, and Carrie by Kimberly Pierce, made in 2013. And not only will I be screening those virtually for all the Ghoul Gang, no matter what level you're at, as a little Halloween thank you, but I'm also going to be throwing a lantern party, an in-person party here in Los Angeles for anyone who is in SoCal or wants to travel to SoCal and have a little in-person party. So if you want to join us for the in-person portion of the party, RSVP at itsalwayshalloweenpodcast@gmail.com. And we're doing a little gift exchange and a potluck. And if you want to just join in for the virtual screening that will be happening that same day, just join the Ghoul Gang, and I'll be sending that link out to everybody who signed up on the Patreon that Saturday morning. So I might even add another screening or two because I am fully in spooky movie mode. And I thought, you know, there's a ton of movies I want to see this season that I haven't seen. And I was thinking, wouldn't it be great to just, if I feel like throwing on a movie, send out a streaming link to the Ghoul Gang and you guys can join me too. It's more fun than watching them alone, of course. And it's not too late to join our book club. We are reading Carrie, which is why I wanted to show both versions of the movie. There's another version of Carrie starring Angela Bettis from the cult horror film May, which I screened last year. One of my favorite horror movies. Put it on your list. And I haven't seen that version of it. So we're screening Brian De Palma's and Kimberly Pierce's version, comparing and contrasting those with the book as well. So you can join us for our book club meeting. You don't have to have read the book or finished the book, or even if you read it once upon a time and you just have a love for it, you can join our meeting where we will discuss it virtually on Tuesday, September 27th at 6 p.m. Pacific Standard Time, and that's over Zoom. So you can get all of this and more at patreon.com/itsalwayshalloween or click that link in our show notes. So I would love to hear how you guys are getting the calendar Halloween season started. I am getting it started. Well, as you know, I am always celebrating here with you guys, but I feel like I'm doing something very scary this week that terrifies me to my bones. And I'm trying to reframe it as a fun Halloween thing that I'm doing. I don't know if the reframing is working, but I am getting my wisdom teeth taken out this week. I have never had full-on dental surgery. I've had cavities drilled, and that is painful enough. So it's happening Thursday. By the time you listen, it will already be done and hopefully not as bad as I am anticipating it to be. So send all your healing Halloween wishes my way. And hopefully I will be able to record next week's episode without any weird slurring or crying, even though I have recorded some cries on the podcast. But I am hoping that I'll have some relief because I've been experiencing a lot of mouth and neck and head pain since the beginning of the summer. So holding out hope that this procedure will bring me some much needed calm so that I really can get the holiday started in the healthiest and happiest way. Feel free to email or DM me any pep talks, any kind words that I could see when I am coming out of my stupor from surgery ween. I hate the way that sounds. I take it back. Do you ever just, something comes out of your mouth and you're instantly like, nope, thought that would be fun in my head, and I hated the way that sounded. Strike surgery ween from the record. Okay, so I've had a question on my mind. Another thing I've been doing to get into the new calendar Halloween season has been watching Matt from Dinosaur Dracula's new Halloween videos and following his blog. He does a Halloween countdown, not in the traditional sense where it's like this many days until Halloween, but every day he writes about something really fun on his blog, and he makes a video a week-ish, depending on what he's able to do, which I've always really loved. He's not beholden to his own structure, and I can really relate to that. So he just did a new video called Let's Dive Into a Woolworth Halloween Circular from 1988, where he examines the different things that were for sale in this Halloween catalog. Not really a catalog, you know, a wispy few pieces of paper that would be inside of one's newspaper in the late 80s. And there was a big spread on the Halloween candy that Woolworths had for sale that week. And he was talking about how when the Halloween candy would come into the house, how tempting it was and how challenging it was to not just go and scarf it all down because it's your favorite candy and it's sitting there in your cupboard. But it's the most taboo version of that candy because you're not allowed to have it or you'll get in trouble. And it just made me think of try to go back in my memory and see if I ever had that feeling. And I realized that he was probably talking about a very common experience that I don't actually think I had because my family never really gave out delicious candy. And it got me thinking on, is this a common experience? Did you guys have really good candy that your family gave out? Now, I know many of you were raised in houses that didn't believe in Halloween or didn't allow you to participate in trick-or-treating. So this question might not apply to you, but for those whose families handed out candy, what was the vibe in your house? Did you get to pick any of the candy out? Were you from a full-size bars household? I gotta know. Or did your family do anything embarrassing, like hand out pennies? Or was your dad a dentist? Did you guys hand out toothbrushes? My family was somewhere in the middle, not quite embarrassing, but not quite delicious. They're really into handing out these Halloween-themed pretzels that are actually pretty cool because they come in this Halloween-themed bag, and they're called Jackson Bats, and they're shaped like little jack-o'-lanterns and little bats. So I think that's really fun, but at the same time, it is pretzels, and I mean, I love pretzels, but I don't know how kids are reacting. But it's different, you know? You get a ton of mini Snickers. But at the same time, can you really have too many mini Snickers? It's just an interesting question to me. We haven't focused that much on the experience of handing out treats. We've talked about going door to door, but what was it like in your family? Did you have to resist eating all the Halloween candy? Did you one year gorge on all the candy and get in trouble? Send me your stories. I want to hear them. Or give us a call at 802-532-DEAD. And again, you can send those emails to itsalwayshalloweenpodcast@gmail.com. I'm going to put the new Dinosaur Dracula video that I referenced here in the show notes, along with his daily Halloween thing blog. If you guys want to check that out, Matt has been entertaining me for Halloween, for 20 Halloweens now, about an early Halloween blogger that continues to bring me the most joy outside of my own work with you guys. So definitely check his work out, especially if you are interested in 70s, 80s, 90s Halloween culture and nostalgia. And speaking of which, I have some fantastic memories to share with you from your fellow lanterns. So let's dive right into the Eek mailbag with this first letter, which has the subject line, Stephen King and Josh. Hello, hello. When I was in college and had access to a library larger than I'd ever have again in my life, I had the wild idea to read every single Stephen King book the man ever put out, in chronological order from beginning to end. After all, how many of them had been turned into name-droppable movies? It's fascinating to see the source material from where these movies began. I had already read a few of his books, and they were amazing page-turners. I was excited to see where my journey would lead. King's writing style, when consumed in such large amounts, led to a sort of drinking game with the subject matter when clichés from his writing would pop up over and over again. Did a character have an alcoholic father? Take a drink. Did AC/DC get referenced somehow? Take a drink. Did a character wet themselves in fear? Take a drink. Actually, Stephen King and Pants Wetting is almost the same as Quentin Tarantino and Feet. It's really odd just how prevalent it is in his writing. Around this time, I discovered the Men Writing Women subreddit, and Stephen King was brought up almost on a daily basis. Lots of times, people talked about how his writing style objectifies women, either from the villain's perspective, or they would talk about King's lack of ability to write from the female perspective without resorting to stereotypes. I became somewhat self-conscious about reading so much of his writing as if I endorsed this view. And yet, everything I can see about the man makes him seem like he's a nice person, at least nowadays. His books aren't always great, and yet they're almost always engrossing. I never did get around to reading all of them. Every year or so, I'll read a book, but I only ever got to 1994's Insomnia. Interestingly, he seems to really embrace any and all creative endeavors, and for that, his praises in regards to quality are of little worth. Someone once put it that the man would endorse a cereal box because he was genuinely impressed with the efforts needed for the creative process and he wanted to celebrate it. I do think there's something admirable about that. Thanks, Josh. Josh, thank you so much for your thoughts and memories related to Stephen King. I agree that there's something admirable about that. And while perhaps seeing a Stephen King blurb might not be what you're looking for when you're wanting to read something that's a guaranteed barn burner, yet, if he's excited by the creative process and talent, or at least promise, I think that that does actually serve as an interesting endorsement, at least for me, as someone who is also excited by the creative talent in others. I think that there's something to be said for somebody who is not holding people up to the same standards as, say, The New Yorker or any type of literati circle. And a lot of times, what people need to get better with their creative talent is encouragement and a boost from a voice that matters. So I think that an endorsement from King, while it might not mean that it's the next Pulitzer Prize winner, does mean that there is something in there that's interesting enough to take you somewhere you've never been before. And then I just want to quickly touch on you feeling self-conscious about reading something that had gotten some criticism. I just want to remind all lanterns that when you engage with art, that engagement is not an endorsement, nor is it an indication of moral superiority or inferiority. There's lots of ways to engage with art, whether it is being critical of it or loving it, or like a lot of work, loving it while being critical of it. We contain multitudes, and so does the art that we consume. If you are interested in the idea of balancing one's love of something while also reckoning with terrible people that are attached to it, I recommend listening to my episode of Girls, Guts, and Giallo with Annie Rose Malamut that we recorded last August on Rosemary's Baby. On that episode, Annie and I discuss reckoning with the director Roman Polanski's legacy of artistry and misogyny as feminist survivors, and I think it might appeal to several of you. That being said, it's a very XXX episode that might not be for all of our listeners. I'll drop that link in the show notes. Josh, thank you for sharing your Stephen King memories, and I have to encourage you to read past 1994 because there's some really great stuff in there. Some of the more modern Stephen King books that I love. The best novel that's come out in the last 20 years is Revival. I'm obsessed with it. Highly recommend. And then I love his short story collection, Everything's Eventual. And I just want to give a shout out to my friend Kay, who just brought me the brand new Stephen King book that got released last week called Fairy Tale. And I'm a couple of chapters into it, and it's really been taking my mind off of my pain and my fear around this upcoming procedure. And so far, so good. No abhorrent stereotypes yet. If you're also reading Fairy Tale, please reach out to me. I would love to discuss this book with somebody as I get through it alongside reading Carrie. You know, it just hit me. It's kind of fun to be reading his very first book and his newest book at the same time. Perfect little kingly sandwich. Oh, what's that? A ring-a-ding-ding? We've got a call from the All Hallows hotline.
Hi, Luce. My name is Ben. I just started listening to your podcast yesterday, and I'm binging it, and I love it. I'm calling because I just heard about the episode where you used to hang out at a cemetery growing up, which I just love. And I wanted to share a little bit about my growing up hanging out in a cemetery, too. So where I grew up, there was this really cool, old, dilapidated cemetery downtown that was totally overrun. And my friends and I used to hang out there every day after school in high school. We called ourselves the book club because, I mean, we were good kids, but we were like also those like theater kids who would smoke cigarettes in the school parking lot. And eventually the teachers were like, you can't smoke cigarettes here, leave. So we told their parents that we were in an after-school book club. The book club actually was us going to the cemetery to hang out and smoke cigarettes every day after high school. And we were there so much that it got to the point that the crypt keeper there, the cemetery manager, actually ended up making friends with us. We thought he was going to shoo us away, but he was super cool. And he was like, no, y'all can hang out here. And do you want a tour of the crematorium? And we were like, hell yeah. So he gave us a tour of the crematorium and like showed us like where, you know, they cremate the bodies. And it was super spooky and creepy, but also kind of really cool. And we ended up being part of a movement to fix the cemetery in the end. There's this movement that got started called Regreen Evergreen, which was the name of the cemetery, because it had all, like, you know, the shrubbery had all died and stuff from being neglected over the years. So we were part of this campaign to help preserve this cemetery in our local hometown. And now it's a beautiful place where, like, they host cemetery screenings and stuff. And, it's just cool to know that space lives on. And we were part of, making it a great space for the community. I hope there's some spooky high school kids hanging out there right now. Hopefully not smoking cigarettes. Don't smoke, kids. It's bad for you. Anyway, love the podcast so much. Thank you for what you're doing. It's bringing lots of people joy and making my spooky little heart very happy.
Ben, what an amazing call. Thank you so much for sharing this story with us. You had me at We Made Friends with the Crypt Keeper. And the fact that you were the bad theater kids, I related to that so hard. I was also a part of the bad theater kid group. We had such a large theater program that there were the tryhards and the really successful people, the nerds, and then Me and my friends were constantly getting in trouble. So we also smoked cigarettes and pot in the parking lot and wherever we could around school. I think it's so admirable that all of your time hanging out in the cemetery led to you being engaged with your community and helping to save and restore the cemetery. And I think it really goes to show how peaceful, relaxing, and important cemeteries are as places to commune and connect. I know this is preaching to many of you out there, as many of us are cemetery lovers, but isn't it interesting when you interact with people who don't feel that way at all, and they're like, ew, creepy. And you're like, of course, I like it because it's a little creepy. We all want to be like a little creepy when we're into this stuff. But it is so peaceful, and it's odd to me when people think that spending time in a cemetery is morbid. I guess there's just two kinds of people, bad cemetery kids and good, boring adults. Ben, thanks again for this fantastic call. It really warmed my heart, and I know that if we grew up in the same town, we would have been hanging out in the cemetery together. Welcome to the podcast. We're excited to have you as a new lantern lighting up our giant front porch. Now, speaking of morbid, our next email has the subject line, The Overlook Lodge. Greeting, Luce and Luceo lanterns, especially those pumpkins who grow in Ohio. I have started reading Stephen King over the last year, and I am entranced by his works. The first one I read was about a year ago, and it was The Shining. I loved it, and I loved watching the movie to compare the two stories. I recently found out that there is a Shining-themed bar in Cincinnati, Ohio. I felt compelled to go, and I thoroughly enjoyed the experience. There were tons of hidden gems in the small bar, and it also did give the feeling of an old, creepy hotel. There was a wall full of room keys, a fireplace, hatchets everywhere, and more taxidermy than I've ever seen in one place. The drink menu consisted of cocktails like Writer's Block and Imaginary Friend. It's so cute. They also had a TV that silently played an older horror movie in the background. My favorite part was outside the bar, there was a large sign that read Jack's typewriter from the movie, "All work and no play makes Jack a dull boy," over and over again. The staff was lovely and the drinks were tasty. If you're in the Cincinnati area, this is a must stop. I've attached some pictures that I took for your enjoyment, Luce. I wish everyone a haunted evening. Mackenzie, they, them. Thank you, Mackenzie. I really appreciate this recommendation, as I grew up in Cleveland, but my paternal side of my family is from Cincinnati. So I have lots of warm memories of Cincinnati, and I still enjoy visiting there when I can. Two of my closest friends live there with their families, so this will definitely be going on my list of places to visit when I finally get to go back to Ohio and see people again. Thank you for taking the time with these pictures and sending them over to accompany your letter. They really help flush out that beautiful picture that you painted for us. And I will put those up on the Instagram so everyone can get enjoyment from them. You mentioned how they play horror movies at the bar, and in one of your pictures, it surely did show that they were playing The Birds while you were there, Hitchcock's The Birds. And there is kind of a fun connection, a light but interesting, I think, connection between Hitchcock and Stephen King. So The Birds required 320,000 live trained birds on set, a number that was only broken by George Romero's adaptation of the Stephen King novel, The Dark Half. That movie required 400,000 birds on set. So these two films have the most birds ever on any film set. And while I looked to see if King ever talked about the influence of the birds on his own work, and I wasn't able to find any good substantial quotes about them, you have to believe that you cannot write a story that involves hundreds of thousands of live birds and not have Hitchcock in the back of your mind. Mackenzie, thank you for thinking of us when you visited this bar. It's exactly the type of recommendation that we crave here. And maybe one day we can meet up and enjoy a little writer's block together. And now let's pick up another call from the All Hallows Hotline.
Hey, Luce. This is Miles from Portland, Oregon. I grew up in Seattle. Anyway, I don't know why I'm sharing that. I love the podcast so much. Been listening since the beginning, and I wanted to share a special, really core Halloween memory for me, which is kind of silly when I reflect on it. Anyway, we were young. I don't know what age. Young. And we gone out with my dad as a time to probably go to, like, soccer practice or something or do something outside the house. And I think this was early in the season, probably, like, mid-September or late September. My mom always had an amazing special talent and flair for getting really excited about holidays and going all out. Anyway, we were out of the house, and when we came back later that night, she had put up, like, just a sprinkling, of decorations. It was, like, a little, like, miniature owl, rose, and she put them high up, like, in the ceiling fans and the lamps and stuff in the house. That was it. It was like a few bats, flying creatures of the night. And for some reason, it blew my mind. And my siblings and I were, we would run around the house looking for more of these little animals that my mom had hid. It was like the animals invaded our home while I was gone. Oh my gosh, so spooky. And we would like stop and point and, like, go, oh, and, like, scare each other and be like, boo. And we were just, I don't know, we ran back and forth for little dopamine hits all around the house. I think there were only, like, four or five animals, but we kept trying to re-experience the initial fright. And it was so magical, and it's a core memory that I think of all the time. It was like, suddenly our house is alive. So now it's a tradition for me to always have at least one or two night creatures hiding up in the lamp or stuff. Anyway, thanks so much. Wanted to share. Happy spooky season, everyone.
Miles, I love the way that you described your excitement at coming home and rushing around to find all of the, as you so perfectly put it, night creatures haunting all of the little corners and nooks of your house. That is such a beautiful experience that your family set up for you. And I think it's a really neat reminder that Halloween doesn't have to be large, expensive events or huge Code Orange shopping halls, that with a few little owls and bats and other creatures tucked into curated little corners, you can put some really life-giving Halloween atmosphere out into your world. I really think we should all meditate on this call, especially if you are one of those people who can feel themselves already getting overwhelmed by everything they want to do and see and buy for this calendar Halloween season. The gorgeous simplicity of this experience that Miles and his siblings had is really something to cultivate and honor and remember that Halloween is that excitement. It's that joy of seeing something where you're not expecting it. And that little dopamine hit that you perfectly said of just a little surprise. Little surprises, little dark twists, places that you're not expecting them. There's so many ways that you can do that simply and inexpensively. Don't put too much pressure on yourself this season. I think that we can all find the joy of Halloween in small, attainable ways. Miles, thank you so much for being an early lantern and sharing this beautiful core memory with us. It feels like a warm blanket, and the way you described it, I feel like I was there. And it's really inspiring me and putting a huge smile on my face. So thank you so much for taking the time to share that with us. You guys, you consistently fill me with awe and wonder, and I just am so thrilled to be able to share and preserve your own personal histories. Now we will have our last email of the episode, and this one is very beautiful as well. Its subject line is Childhood Halloween Memories. Hello, I want to share my favorite Halloween childhood memories with you and my fellow lanterns. Halloween has always been my favorite holiday, and it was my mom's too. She was an amazing artist and would make wreaths, decorate shirts, and so much more for the holidays. Somehow, the shirts she made still fit me 9 years later. Every year, the day before Halloween, which I call Halloween Eve, I would wear one of the shirts to school, and then the following day, we'd all wear our costumes to school. My other favorite Halloween events were decorating with my family and watching the Halloween Town series on Disney Channel. I still watch those movies every year because they remind me of my mom. I believe that the veil between our two worlds is definitely down on Halloween and all the days surrounding Halloween. That's when I can feel my mom's presence even stronger than usual. Thank you so much for making this podcast, and I hope you all have a frighteningly fun October. Alex. Alex, thank you for sharing that extremely sweet and thoughtful letter with us. You know, I've heard from many lanterns that they feel the presence of their past loved ones the strongest around Halloween. And I think you're 100% right that it's not necessarily just a old wives' tale or a spooky story that the veil is thin around Halloween. It really does feel like there is truth to that. And I'm so happy to hear that despite your mom being gone, that you still get to experience that connection through Halloween. It sounds like you had a really special relationship. If you have any pictures of you in these special Halloween shirts, I know I'd love to see them. And I think it's really fun that you got to have these little traditions around Halloween that were just yours and your mom's. And it's so great to hear from people when they do a Halloween tradition that's totally their own, either their family or them with their friends or something they just do for themselves. Traditions, whether they are old or new, are such a great way to bond with our loved ones, our community, and our culture. So please keep in mind this calendar Halloween season, there's no wrong way to celebrate. No tradition is too big or too small or too specific. If it matters to you, then it matters to Halloween. So please, lanterns out there on our great big porch, keep calling in and writing in and sharing your personal histories and traditions with us here. I know that everyone in Halloween land is excited to hear them. As I said at the top of the episode, if you love It's Always Halloween, then subscribe on Patreon at patreon.com/itsalwayshalloween, or you can leave us a little something in our tip jar, or you could get It's Always Halloween merch on Redbubble. All of those links, plus our Instagram and our local Lantern Society forms, are in our show notes. This episode of It's Always Halloween was performed by me, Luce Tomlin Brenner, with help from your fellow lanterns, Miles, Ben, Josh, Alex, and Mackenzie. Thanks so much, you lovely lanterns, for helping to make this show so special. The editing, the music, and sound design is by the wonderful Pete Burns. Thanks, Pete. You can follow me on Instagram and Twitter at LTB Comedy and Pete at Mittenberries. If you're on Apple Podcasts, please subscribe and write us a little review so that other like-minded ghouls can find us. We've got a couple cute examples I want to share with you recently. This one is by Buggy1212, and the subject line is, "My favorite podcast. This podcast is so much fun and so well done. The host does a fabulous job researching interesting, meaningful, and fun topics around all things Halloween and more. I look forward to listening to each episode." Why, thank you, Buggy. I really appreciate that. And then this one from Elizabeth Laswell says, "All the Halloween goodness. This is the perfect way to get into the Halloween and fall spirit. Interesting and fun stories, historical facts, and great ideas, all spooky related. Lucy is so sweet and inclusive and imaginative. Brava, creepy queen." Clapping hands emoji. Why, thank you, Elizabeth. Brava with the short and sweet review. And then lastly, from Rochelle2251, "This podcast helps infuse the Halloween spirit into every week of the year. Start at the beginning to get a historical background of Halloween, and then follow along each week to learn from a worldwide community of frightful friends." That's very cute. I like frightful friends a lot. Thank you, Rochelle. All these reviews really help the podcast get pushed up the unknowable Apple algorithm, and we really are able to reach more like-minded people this way. So thank you to everyone who's taken the time to leave a thoughtful review and combat some of the nasty ones that have been coming our way recently. You can subscribe wherever you can find It's Always Halloween, including the NPR One app, where you can subscribe and tell Ira Glass that you love us. Thanks so much for listening to yet another episode of It's Always Halloween. And come back next time, unless you get swept up by one of the creatures of the night that lives in your lampshade.